Cantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Finding Our Forever by Lan LLP, narrated by John Masterson and Cassandra Miles. Chapter 1. Wesley. Damn that Carson Bradley. Damn him straight to hell. Because of his finding of mediocre quality additives in the Montgomery Neomed infant formula, my company has been slammed and ridiculed in all directions. Every TV station and social media platform is calling us the greedy baby killers. Neomed has taken such a severe nosedive in the stock market that its future is uncertain. I have more lawsuits than sales coming from every country possible. To top it off, angry investors are now riding my ass, demanding compensation for their losses. What compensation? My company is now running on a negative budget. We'll soon be run down to the ground. Fuck you, Bradley. Why couldn't you just mind your own business and stick to curing cancer? Why meddle in someone else's affairs? Why do you have to be the root of my aggravation and stress? We don't know each other, and I have nothing against you. So why fuck with me? What's your motive? Is it because of your insatiable hunger for more money, like it is for my father and his father? Isn't there enough to go around for everyone? I think so. But maybe this greedy bastard doesn't. In addition to my own personal hell, my father sent me the company jet yesterday and insisted that I rush back to Boston for a family crisis. "Wes, I need you here in the States. We have a situation I can't contain alone," he admitted to me last night during our phone conversation. "I need you, son." He sounded abnormally desperate. Whatever predicament he's in, it must be a major one. Montgomery's don't normally fuck up, but when we do, my father Chandler never fails to find a solution. To him it doesn't matter how his people approach the problem. All he cares about is that it's no longer his problem. His father, my granddad Charles, did it for him and his brother, and now that granddad's gone, he has inherited that role. He's the bond that has kept the Montgomery Medical Corporation together and prosperous. He's a shrewd businessman who's taught me everything I know. 9 years ago, after I graduated from Harvard, Father sent me directly to Hong Kong to be his liaison for the Asian branch of Montgomery Medical. He told me he couldn't see anyone more befitting and qualified for that position than me. I didn't believe him. I knew the real reason behind his push. My mother, Mimi, urged him to send me. She was jealous of our relationship. In her twisted head, she believed Father cared more for me than he cared for her. I went begrudgingly, but not before I confronted him about Mimi. I asked him why she hated me, her son, so much. He shrugged his shoulders and never once tried to refute my allegation. It was a hard blow for me. Thinking and knowing are two separate things. Knowing your mother doesn't love you is much more painful than thinking she doesn't. Chandler and Mimi Montgomery adopted me through an elite adoption agency after they discovered they couldn't have any children of their own. Chandler wanted a son to pass on the Montgomery name, and Mimi wanted a baby to flaunt to her socialite friends. In the beginning, I was the darling apple of Mimi's eyes. She showered me with hugs and kisses and expensive clothes and toys. Unfortunately, when the novelty of having a baby wore off, she grew bored of me. The responsibility of rearing a needy baby was cramping her social obligations and diminishing her beauty. God forbid she'd allow that to happen. My father was too busy ruling over his medical empire to deal with Mimi and her tantrums. It was simply easier for him to give into her whim, so he agreed to hire a live-in nanny to take Mimi's maternal role. Finding Miss Polly for me is the only caring thing she's ever done for me. Miss Polly reared me with love and kindness and ingrained decent morals in me that contradicted my father's. I respect and love her much more than any Montgomery elders. From the polished surface, our family appeared Photoshop perfect, but internally we were anything but perfect. We were more screwed up and dysfunctional than most families. One thing Granddad used to tell me that has stayed with me is, money can mask anything, even the ugliest. I honestly believe this is the motto my father runs his business and lives his life by. Maybe this time he's finally stumbled upon a crisis where money can't mask his problem. Carson. Lil, here's the second pill, I insist before we head for the airport. It'll take the edge off your cramping.
I don't need it, she says faintly, dodging my concerned eyes.
Please, just take it, I insist again, more firmly this time. Reluctantly, she takes the pill and glass from my hands with an annoyed sigh.
Fine.
The limo pulls around to pick us up. As soon as we settle into our seats, Lillian's eyes drift outside the window to avoid having any contact with mine.
Give her time. She still loves you.
I decide that if I keep reminding myself how much she still loves me, uncertainty will become certain, and I won't lose faith. She's resentful because of the destructive events that surround us, not because of me, I pray. When I welcomed her into my world, I only had the purest intentions of offering her all my love and making her the happiest woman in the world, because that's what she's done for me. I never meant to shatter her spirit with endless tears and heartache, never. The road ahead of us will be difficult, this I know, but I'm willing to give it my all. I'll set aside my pride and yield to her demands if I need to. Her love is all I want. I don't give a shit if I sound desperate. Peering out the opposite window from Lillian, I see that we're approaching the airport. The driver slows down before coming to a complete stop. He waits for a clearance sign from security. They flash him a light signal to give him the okay, and he drives toward the jet. Ready, Angel? She nods warily. As soon as we're safely cruising in the air, you can sleep in the cabin until we land in Boston, I suggest, fighting my need to touch her, hold her in my arms.
Sounds good, she replies. Her tone remains distant.
Give her time. She still loves you. Checking in on Lillian, I see that she's finally sound asleep. The pain pill has momentarily knocked her out and is masking the sadness that torments her. Seizing the opportunity, I sit down beside her and reflect on all the misfortunes that she's had to endure since I intruded into her world. The list is unbelievable. I hate myself for having put her through the engulfing flames of hell because of my need to be with her. I'm sorry, Lillian. Sorry for your suffering. Sorry for the tears. Sorry for failing you. I whisper into her temple while gently stroking her face. Please forgive me. Love me again. How did I do so much damage to one person's life in such a short amount of time? Am I that dangerous and poisonous? I won't allow her to suffer anymore. I refuse to. Last night I called Owen with specific instructions to have someone come to the penthouse to remove all the baby furniture and anything else that could possibly remind Lillian of our unborn baby. I don't want anything to trigger memories of her miscarriage. It will be my priority to shield her from any more tears. After I ended my call with Owen, I contacted my parents to tell them about the accident. My mother was especially affected, urging me to get to the bottom of this so-called accident. She wept as hard as Lillian did, insisting that I do all I can to support her through this fragile time. She assured me her welcoming arms will be waiting for me when I see her. I'm ever so grateful for my parents. I'd be lost without them. They've been my source of strength and support through every step of my life. I know they'll help me get through this tragedy, just like they did for me after Emily passed. Following her meltdown, Mother warned me about Bianca. Ever since their heated confrontation, she's convinced Bianca is the devil himself. She told me I shouldn't overlook Bianca as a suspect. I agreed, of course, but can Bianca be that heinous? She might be selfish, spoiled, and conniving, but attempted murder seems far-fetched to me. Regardless, I'm not ruling anything out, especially after her picture scam and the fact that Lillian recognized Sasha from the island. Luke is already investigating Bianca's possible involvement since late last night after he flew into Boston. In a few days, I'll find out what kind of bitch work Bianca's been convincing Sasha to do for her. My thoughts fade into the background when I feel Lillian's body shifting under the sheets. She's awake. Rubbing her eyes and forcing them to stay open, she asks, "Are we there yet?"
Her solemn voice and empty expression depresses me, hurts me. I miss her beautiful smile. Her sadness is all I can see in her dull brown eyes. Who can I blame for her misery but myself? Almost, Angel. We have about 20 more minutes before we land. Can I get you anything? I offer as I brush the back of my hand along her face, savoring the silkiness of her warm skin. I need to call my mom as soon as I can. I don't want her to worry about me. Her tone is composed as she rolls her back to me. God, this is going to kill me if she continues to keep herself detached from me. I want to hold her, feel her against my body, but she's doing all she can to keep me from touching her. I know I shouldn't push her during this brittle period, but how can I help her if she won't let me in? No problem. You can call her as soon as we get back to the penthouse, but I stall briefly to ground myself. I know that as soon as I give her my stipulations, she's going to be pissed at me. She sits up to face me while shoving back the sheet covering her body. But you can't divulge our location, and she can't tell anyone you've contacted her. Narrowing her ireful eyes, she glowers at me in response. If looks can kill, I'd be lying dead in my own pool of blood from piercing glares lodged in my chest. I'm sorry, Lil, but it's for security reasons, I explain, feeling her mounting heat swarm around me. You have no idea how difficult that's going to be for me. How do you expect me to accomplish that? She'll blow a blood vessel from being so angry with me, she retorts crossly, her chest inflated from huffing so deeply. I'm sorry, we'll figure something out. I attempt to placate her fury, but fail miserably to diminish it and her doubts. I reach for her hand. Lil, please, I love you. I'll do anything to make things better, to make you happy again. Her wet, swollen eyes meet mine, and she nods to acknowledge my plea. Finally, a glimpse of hope. And how long will I have to be your prisoner? She demands resentfully, wiping away my sliver of hope. Lil, you're not my prisoner, you're my fiancée. I'm keeping you safe with me, not holding you against your will, I reply, praying my temper will not overshadow my patience. I know your world is beyond complicated because of me, and I hate myself for it. I wish I can undo it all, but I can't. My frustration is clearly evident in my voice. I swear I'll spend the rest of my life making it up to you. A noticeable smile sidles across her face, and what a beautiful sight it is for me. Please don't hate yourself, she consoles. Hate the situation. Leaning into her lips, I kiss them for the first time since yesterday. Please don't pull away. God, I miss the sweet taste and silky feel of them. Her lips part slightly, welcoming my tongue to enter and stroke hers. The kiss is intense, full of broken sentiments waiting to escape. I can sense that she misses me just as much from her longing, clinging response to my kissing. I cherish our intimacy, because this is the closest she's allowed me to be near her since the miscarriage. At the conclusion of our kiss, her eyes close in reflection. She shuts me out as she stows away her brittle emotions. When she opens them, sadness glazes over her dark pupils once again, dulling its vibrant gleam and making me feel defeated. I need more time. Be patient with me, she says softly to me. Lifting her left hand up to my lips, I place a kiss on it. We have forever, I remind her. Another stunning smile spreads across her face, and it melts my heart like the warmth from a hot summer sun. Captain Franco lands the jet at a private tarmac for BPC. I peer out the window to see Owen waiting by a black limousine with a driver standing beside him. He surveys the area several times before giving me a hand signal to lead Lillian down the steps toward him. Mr. Bradley, Miss Lee, he greets us with a nod of his head and a troubled expression. Lillian waves to gesture hello as she shivers from the blowing, chilling wind. Putting my arms around her shoulders, I rush her into the inviting, heated limo. Better? I ask attentively. Lillian nods to reply as she brushes her hands up and down her arms to keep herself warm. I notice she scoots slightly away from me when I enter, but I won't let that rejection upset me. I promised her I'd be patient. "Oh, and any news on our missing researchers?" I ask him openly after I'm settled in my seat. Owen is sitting in the front with the driver. Lillian threatened that if I don't keep her completely informed, I will have to deal with her wrath. Since I'm already treading on thin ice, I decide to respect her terms for now. Owen shakes his head while giving me a subtle, "Are you sure?" look through the rear mirror. I nod. "Miss Lee knows. Go ahead and give us the update." Mr. Carter thinks the perpetrators may have found the homing tattoos and disabled them. The signals are lost. The only thing we can confirm is they're in Massachusetts somewhere.
"How? God damn it!" I seethe.
My raised, ireful voice startles Lillian, making her flinch slightly. I quickly rest my hand over hers to soothe her. "I already have a team of 5 highly decorated ex-Navy SEALs on the case. They're going to meet you at Steward Laboratory tomorrow morning for a briefing, and then head out to track down your missing researchers." "Well done, Owen. It's impressive that you were able to gather so many good men in a short amount of time," I commend as soon as I collect myself and my wit. 2 lives are currently at stake here, and possibly more. I can't afford to lose my wit." "Thank you, sir." The gravity of our situation finally sinks in for Lillian. Turning to face me, she stares vacantly in disbelief. Her eyes are widened and rounded like that of an owl. She's probably thinking, what the hell did she get herself into? I can only imagine how overwhelmed she's feeling. Is she regretting her decision to be with me? Does she want to leave me now? Her mouth opens like she wants to say something, but she's too stunned to speak. I'm terrified of what she might tell me. I wrap my arm around her shoulders and hug her rigid frame into my chest. "I love you, Lil," I say under my breath against her forehead. She doesn't respond. She remains frozen, speechless. "Will we see Luke this evening?" "Yes, sir." "I want him with Miss Lee at all times," I instruct. What if they come after Lil? I'm hit with the realization that she'd make a perfect target if they ever discover she's my only weakness.
"She's never to be out of his sight," I add.
The forceful tone of my voice comes across more desperately than I wanted to project. I can't lose my poise either. Her body shrinks back from the booming sound of my overbearing demand. I'm definitely not helping my situation with my explosive temperament. I need to do some damage control. Tilting her chin up with my index finger so our eyes meet, I attempt to ease her concerns. "It's only temporary, I promise." Her dodging, narrowed brown eyes tell me she doesn't buy my bullshit.
"Why should I believe you? You already promised me that once before,"
she snaps back with sarcasm as she folds her arms over her chest, avoiding Owen's glances through the rear mirror. I'm positive he feels like a third wheel. Yes, it's a terrible position for him to be in, but I'm selfishly grateful he's here to absorb some of Lillian's radiating heat. Without him, she would have already ripped into me instead of being politely mocking. "Lil, I understand why you're upset with me, but like I said, it's only cautionary. Please give me a little time to sort this out," I persuade as I attempt to hold on to her hand.
"Do I really have a choice, Carson?"
she retorts with a nastier undertone before turning her head to glare out the window on her side, ignoring me. Once more, I'm at a loss for words. She's absolutely right. She doesn't have a choice. Not when her safety might be at stake again. Owen shifts to face the window on his side, probably to avoid any more awkward eye contact from the rear mirror. He's most likely in a state of disbelief. For the first time ever, he just witnessed me setting aside my pride to appease a woman, and I don't give a shit what he thinks about my action. Let him see my weak, vulnerable side. I'm not ashamed. Ensuring that Lillian remains in my life is my priority, as well as making her understand how much I love her. That is all that matters to me.
Chapter 2. Lillian. the soft creases around his weary eyes and the helplessness reflected from his troubled face indicates to me that he's as disheartened as I am. Even though Carson is trying his best to be sympathetic and accommodating to my situation, it's still not enough to settle my uncertainties. I've lost my identity and strength, and hell yes, I'm going to blame him for my misfortunes. When I found him nearly dead on the beach 3 months ago, I never imagined my life would turn this chaotic. I lost my virginity and a pregnancy that I'm struggling to accept. My future to become a physician has never been this unclear and out of reach for me, and I have no control over the direction of my life. Carson's cutting me off from the world until who knows when. I feel completely isolated and alone, with no one to lean on. I know my heart will always belong to him, but my wearied mind implores me to run like mad from this nightmare. How much more can I endure before the hurdles defeat me entirely? Crisscrossing my hands, my fingertips brush over a cool, protruding, smooth surface. The sensation draws my eyes from the tinted window down to my ring finger. I spot Carson's glistening pink diamond. Heartfelt memories of happier times course in stirring waves, and I'm reminded of our promise of forever and his devotion and love for me. Regardless of how taxing my situation is or will continue to be, I can never picture a life without him. I'm also hopelessly in love with this man.
Lil, we're here.
Carson taps my shoulder to alert me, pausing my moment of reflection and self-pity. I peer up to see that we're parked at some unfamiliar underground garage. It's dark, empty, and unnerving as my eyes skim the obscure, cold perimeter. Eerie fluidity shadows casted over a concrete path from massive metal beams incite images of the shrouded Grim Reaper with his deadly scythe ready to harvest our souls. My horrible imagination sends a terrifying chill and goosebumps down my stiff spine.
It'll just be a few minutes. We're waiting for clearance,
Carson explains as he leans forward out of the black sinister background and into a hopeful ray of light projected from a control panel. Grasping my hand gently, he gauges my reaction to his touch from my body language. I leave my hand in his as I catch Owen's eyes, studying my response from the shadows via the rear mirror. Owen's buzzing phone slices through the muted darkness, disrupting our overflowing soundless tension.
Hello,
he answers, his tone stern.
Was it clean?
Owen inquires as his inexpressive eyes scurries to meet Carson's through the rear mirror. I listen keenly to every spoken word, trying to filter what's happening.
Excellent,
he exclaims, with more spirit than I've ever heard from him.
We'll be up there in 5. I'll see you and the others tomorrow morning. I take it that we're cleared,
Carson clarifies with Owen.
Yes, sir. Luke is already upstairs waiting for us.
Owen reaches for the door handle. He swings it open, and the bitter November chill streams in like he just opened a deep freezer door. My body shivers even more. Noticing my reaction, Carson shields me with his arms. His warmth is inviting, making it difficult for me to resist his comfort as I nuzzle against him and inhale his irresistible heady scent. For a change, I look forward to seeing Luke. I owe him so much for all he's done for my friends and me. If it wasn't for his bravery, we probably wouldn't have made it up that cliff in one piece. My eyes begin to well up with burning tears again as I recall the accident from 2 days ago. Anxiety pulls in my heart. I wonder how Amelia is getting along. I need to know what condition she's in. Carson will have hell to pay if he tries to keep me from speaking to them. I blame myself for involving them. I should have told them about Luke before they trustingly stepped into the SUV with me. Would we all be in class together, and I would still be pregnant with my peanut right now if I hadn't offered to drive us? What if I would have paid better attention instead of taking my eyes off the road? The flimsy gate that's been holding back my tears crumbles down into pieces. I can't keep them from spilling down my face as I ask myself what-if questions. Guilt is a ruthless bitch. Brushing the back of my hand across my face, I smear the dampness from my eyes and cheeks as I pray the darkness will conceal my heartache from Carson. Owen exits first, and then Carson follows. Reaching in for my hand, Carson helps me out of the limo and into his warm, inviting arms again. We proceed down a deserted concrete path, which I noticed earlier, to enter a confined elevator that could turn anyone claustrophobic, even if they aren't. There's just enough room for three people. My heart is racing, bombarded with all kinds of fear that has been inflicting me for as long as I can remember. The anxiety radiating from my body is so palpable that it's impossible for me to hide it. Perceptive as always, Carson gently circles his arms around my waist to allow me to burrow my head into his protective chest. I convince myself to calm down, and to my amazement, it seems to be working. As soon as the elevator comes to a stop, it opens up to a private entrance of a penthouse, Carson's. Why am I surprised that he has a personal elevator? When Owen spots Luke's rigid frame standing fixed in the middle of an elaborate wine cellar, he steps out first and then signals for us to follow his lead. My heart, full of gratitude, wills me to run over to give Luke a hug, but I refrain myself. I'm unsure how he and Carson would respond to a touching gesture of gratefulness. It could just be my imagination, but I think I can decipher a hinting smile on his impassive face as he watches us walking toward him. "Luke, am I ever glad to see you? You disappeared before I could thank you." I reach for his hand and squeeze it, as if I'm indebted to him for eternity. His sliver of a smile grows wider from our contact. "I'm safely here because of you." "Thank you," I continue, choked with emotions.
"Yes, Luke. Thanks for bringing Miss Lee safely back to me." Carson chimes in with his right hand splayed on the small of my back, drawing me back to his side. "No problem, sir," Luke replies, immediately wiping away his budding grin. "Before I head out, is there anything else you need?" he offers, standing at attention. "No, not at the moment," Carson answers, his voice firm and strong. "And you, let's get you upstairs to find you something to eat," he says to me in a contrasting, playful tone.
I wave goodbye to Luke and follow Carson down a hallway with wooden walls filled with hundreds, maybe even thousands of wine bottles, to a spiral staircase. This area of the penthouse is new to me. I wasn't nosy enough to snoop around the last time I was here. The enormity of his place is unbelievable. When we make it up to the top of the stairs, a beautiful floor-to-ceiling mural of Tuscany in all its glory keeps us from going any further. It's as if we've hit a dead end, literally a wall. Standing in awe with my gaping mouth, I study all the fine details the artist has captured and sealed into his painting of a quaint countryside. He didn't miss anything. I see fruit trees, flowers of all varieties, birds pecking at seeds on the ground, and butterflies perched on green leafy branches. It's so realistic that I can picture myself inhaling the freshly picked lavender branch in my hand with the hot sun beaming down on my face.
"You like it?"
"Love it."
"The artist is from Florence. I commissioned him to paint a replica of my window view from a place I vacationed at," he explains as he watches me admire his wall. "I'll take you there one day so you can see it in person."
"I'm sure it's even more amazing in person."
"It is,"
Carson agrees as he presses his thumb into a discreet symbol purposefully blended into the painting. A door-sized part of the wall slides clear to give us passage into another area. He ushers me through the opening. I see that it leads to a stocked pantry adjacent to the kitchen when we're at the other end. It feels like I'm in a James Bond movie with all the secretive passageways and security clearances. My mind is seriously in a state of shock. I don't think I can handle one more unsolicited surprise today. Carson searches for my wandering eyes, possibly to assess my reaction to this surreal part of his life that I was completely unaware of.
"Lil, I know this is a lot for you to grasp in one day, but..."
"You think?" I retort, trying to hold my frayed strand of sanity together, which is slowly loosening at the already delicate seams. After discovering the magnitude of Carson's wealth, I anticipated we would face some challenges, but never to this inconceivable extent. I think my sarcasm and shortness directed at him are justifiable. Calm and collected as he can be,
Sample complete. Ready to continue?